Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 3 Adhikarna 3 Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan, page 51. Nishkalam Nishkriyam Shantam. The Lord is without decay, without material activities, and undisturbed, Sweta Svatara Upanishad 6.19. Ashabdham Asparsham Arupam Avyayam. The Lord is without sound, without touch, without form, and indestructible. Katha Upanishad 1.3.15. Sarva karma, sarva kama, sarva gandha, sarva rasa. The Lord has all activities, all desires, all fragrances, and all rasas. Chandogya Upanishad 3.14.4. All material qualities are actually false, dosha. The Lord has no fault recognized in the world. Aishwarya yogad bhagavan virudharto vidhiyate. Tatapi dosha parame naiva harya katanchana. Guna virudha apitu samaharyascha sarvataha. Because of his endowment of powers, Bhagavan is said to have contrary characteristics. Still, the fault of birth and transformation can never be found in the Supreme Lord. But contrary qualities are found together in the Lord. Kurma Purana. See, the difficulty comes up is that we... It's a new clock. Yes, okay. The difficulty comes up is that we're trying to work within logic, right? Because of our position, we work with the tools we have, and the tools we have are material. And those material tools means we have to work within the realm of logic. I mean, you can work lower than that, of course, but you know, but the highest level means you're working with some logic, right? Logic, intelligence, some education, some knowledge. But the problem is having only material senses, material mind and intelligence, right, and a material ego or identity, therefore all we can actually perceive and work with is material, right? So that gives us two problems. Our only experience is material, and our only experience is the ascending process of knowledge, right? So the inductive, that's all we have. So that comes down to the difficulty is that when we try to appreciate the Supreme Lord, he neither has material qualities, and you can't understand it by mundane intelligence, by the ascending process, because he's beyond the position of the perspective of the tools that we have. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Like if you have something that can see, you know, for let's say half a kilometer, you can't see something that's 10 kilometers away. Mm-hmm. It just can't do that, yes.
So we can say that it's only the question of faith.
It comes down to a question of faith, because mm-hmm. the Lord can only be known by revelation. So it is a specific process. It is a logical process. It can be appreciated by the intelligence and the senses. But it can only be accessed through faith.
So can we say that faith is primary and logic is secondary?
Yes, because the logic is only in support of, because faith doesn't require the logic, right? But it's not that it's unreasonable. That's the whole point, is that the Lord's position, even though he's beyond logic, it's not that logic won't be satisfied. But it's only if there's faith you can do that. Because even we want to operate the material intelligence and reasoning, we're still going to only, since we're working within the mundane, we can only work with the modes of nature. And so what particular modes we have, the particular kind of intelligence, mind and false ego and senses that we have, we can only work and perceive in that realm. Just like, let's say, someone is an optimist, they will only perceive nice things. Someone's a pessimist, they will only perceive that. Or some people may a little bit this, but they can only work within what is their conditioning. Right? They can't work outside of that. That's the difficulty.
So the method of descending is something very new for the conditioned Shiva.
The idea of?
The method of descending is new for the conditioned Shiva in the material world. And therefore, how is it possible for him to put faith in something which is not in his experience? Is it because of the mercy and compassion of the Lord and the devotees that this can be appreciated?
And so, okay, you're approaching it as, since we don't have the process to, we don't have the tools to understand the Lord, and that means it has to descend, that's something new to us. So then, so is it therefore only by the Lord's mercy that we have faith? What would be the natural explanation? What have you heard? Or what do you understand?
By the devotee's mercy. Generally, we hear that it's by the devotee's mercy.
Yes, we hear by the devotee's mercy. So, is there another process other than that? Have we heard that? See, there's this... The difficulty comes down to is... Those that identify themselves as intellectual say that they're not working on the platform of faith. But it's a 100% misnomer on their part. It's just like, let us say like this, you know, we use our funny example. Let us say you have, you know, a foreign car, okay? And you have one of these Calcutta ambassador taxis. Right? Now, for most everybody, then for general people, they will both be called cars or automobiles. Right? But now let's say you have the guy that identifies, he's a petrol head, right? So he identifies with the car and what it can do and everything like that, right? Will he call that ambassador a car? No. You understand? So the difficulty comes down is all those who identify in the within the material context of that they are intelligent, they are philosophical, they are logical. They don't see anything but their particular perspective as intelligent. Because as we mentioned before, is they're limited by their modes of nature. So they're limited by what they can actually perceive. But they have the false ego that they can perceive anything, know everything. It's a disease. And it's 100%. You know what I'm saying? So that's why we have we make the points about scholars. We don't have any problem with people being intelligent. We like people that are intelligent. But when they identify as a scholar, that disease makes it that they can't appreciate. It's just like someone with jaundice cannot appreciate sugar. It's bitter, or at least minimal, it's neutral taste, right? Your liver's out, you eat something sweet, everybody else is saying, wow, this is so sweet. To you, it has no sweetness at all. There's nothing. So that's the disease, it's a problem, it has to be appreciated. Because they take so much, you can only work on faith, but they don't see that. Like we were just discussing, I think yesterday about how you say it? Nietzsche?
Nietzsche.
Is that how you say his name? Nietzsche.
Huh?
Nietzsche. 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 Okay, that's better because Nietzsche in Bengali means lower, which is about kind of right. But,
inner meaning.
Yes, the inner meaning. So then he'll see that everybody has these ideals, right? These, what do you call it? The true world, they call it. You know, it's that it's beyond what you can't perceive. You know, someone's heaven, someone's this, someone's that, but it's something beyond some ideal. And he'll say, that's just faith. People make that up. But now, the fun part is that his observation is built on that all humans do it. So there's no concept in his mind that if science means I can perceive something and see a pattern, he can't conceive of why is there a pattern? Why is there science? They just take it that because I see it, that's the reason it exists. So it's always an impersonalistic kind of thing. So they can't appreciate that they have faith in what they're doing. They have faith that I can see this and it will work in this regular way. Therefore, I can have a philosophy that all these people are just doing this on sentiment. Right? And there's no exception. That's the whole point of science. That it means it can't be. So whatever that they appreciate, then the consistency's there, they'll use it for their advantage. But at the same time, they use all the consistencies that they don't like to their own advantage, to others' disadvantage. But they're not seeing is why is there a consistency? Why is means just as they're looking for something beyond, and that makes them satisfied, right? If I know, okay, if I'm going to go to heaven, so therefore I'm nice, and I'll go to heaven, and so I'm satisfied that even though everybody else is behaving badly, I'll behave nicely because I'm going to get that benefit and they won't, right? So I can work. But at the same time, as he's looking for answers, also he just comes up with his particular angle on things to say that all this is just sentiment and I'm using intelligence. But the thing is he's satisfied in himself that I'm using intelligence, therefore he can be peaceful. He's doing exactly the same thing. 100%. Yeah, I mean, don't tell this to those people. They'll freak out. You know? But that's the whole thing. It can't be appreciated because of the modes of nature. So it's only by the mercy of the devotee. So since there is no context here of understanding what's there, you know, it means in the direct way, because there's no context. But at the same time, as we have to understand, is that being a reflection, then there is a context. But you have to appreciate that a reflection comes from an original. And then to be able to perceive it like that, how are you going to do that? Because that's not a vision here. So it's only going to come by the Lord's mercy. And what's the form of the Lord's mercy? The devotees. They're the ones that come and reveal. Because Krishna already is everything. He's already behaving in the capacity of everything. So all of what is of value to the materialist, you know, whether it's in karma or jnana, they're already perceiving the Lord, and that potency is already the Lord. It's already coming through his material potency. And so they can appreciate it, that this is of value. But to be able to understand that the origin of this is a person, just like they're a person, that then is only by the mercy of the devotees. That's why then the first offense, don't offend devotees, because that's our connection. Right? The Lord follows the mercy of the devotees. Because he just follows how you deal. So now, so as a materialist, how will you ever deal beyond karma and jnana? So it's only when the devotees, and so therefore you're only working karma and jnana, Krishna will reciprocate in karma and jnana. So to break that, it's the Vaishnava's mercy. That's the connection. Because it's a matter of the potency of the primary. That chit potency coming down through whatever it is that you're seeing. So you're seeing with the same senses, using the same mind, same intelligence, and possibly even the same identity. But now you can get a glimmer of the Supreme. By now it's been empowered by that association with the Vaishnavas. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the connection. That makes the difference. So it's the association of Vaishnavas that make it work. Otherwise, if we think it's within the context of the secondary, you know, it's a form we use, it's how we deal, and this and that, that has zero to do with actually if they become Krishna conscious or not. You know what I'm saying? Does it matter if I'm plugging in the toaster? If I do it, you know, in beat with the music, you know, or I give a nice speech before, or I put a ribbon on it, you know, or I comb my hair before so I look good. It has nothing to do with it, right? But the only advantage to it is that the conditioned soul, because of their nature, they may or may not be attracted by a certain presentation. That's all. Because they value the mundane, they look at the quality of the mundane. And by that, they're interested in certain things. You know what I'm saying? It's like, let's say, you make a presentation, let's say, of Krishna consciousness using rock music. So people who appreciate that, they might be attracted and they'll go and hear the holy name and everything like that. You know, and you can sit there and talk about your tattoos and all that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? But someone who doesn't like that, they just figure, who wants to go to a rock and roll concert? That's the music they play in Walmart, you know. That's elevator music. You know, so why would you listen to that? So they're not going to be attracted by that. They're not going to go. You know, so this whole idea is that, oh, you have to do this, you have to behave like, no, that's for those people in that modes. But it has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. It's just a matter you have to access the particular people. And of course, we having a conditioning, we can naturally, if we're using that conditioning, we can work within a particular circle, and that circle for us is our world. And so therefore, then our universal worldview then will be according to what is our conditioning. And therefore, I can relate to these guys, so this is how it's have to happen. You know, it's happening on the street, this is all that, and this and that. Yeah, of course, yeah, we have some devotees off the street. Yeah, I'm just saying some, but we also have some people from the, you know, professional background. We have some, you know, we have some school teachers, we have, you know, other people who are into other things. That's the thing. The universalness is the Krishna consciousness. It's not the other stuff. Is that what I'm saying? So the point is that bridge is the desire of the Vaishnavas to benefit the living entities. In other words, jiva doya. That's the key. Right, we get jiva doya from Vaishnav seva. Right, so does that make sense? So that's how it works. That's mechanically how it works. So then we see here is, so that means is, therefore you see just in these last few verses that we heard, there is talking about how the Lord has nothing material, but at the same time is he has all qualities. The Lord has all activities, all desires, all fragrance, and all rasa in Chandogya Upanishad. Right? Because here, in these kind of things, they're just quoting that. Once you've established that, then he's bringing in the Puranas. Right? Because for some people, unless you've already established it in the Upanishads, they're not even going to listen. Right? In other words, the more they identify themselves as smart, the more it has to go that way. Right? So, now, then the Purana, because it's making, bringing it practical, because it has to be used by us. The Upanishads means you have to think. Right? The Puranas means you have to think enough where you're interested to apply. But for the Upanishads, you have to actually be able to think. Then having thought, then you see the value in application, and then from application, then you get the result. Right, so that's the nice thing about the Puranas. It's already kind of taken it a little bit ahead for us. Right, so There it says that then you're going to have contradictory aspects. Because if everything's coming from the Lord, that means both the original and the reflection are coming from the Lord. And the reflection and the original, though are in common in one point, they're also opposites in the other. Right? The tree is going to be there. The reflection in the water may be or not, depending upon how still the water is, what's the weather like, and everything like that. So it's dependent. In other words, the material is dependent upon the spiritual. And because of that, if it's in line with the spiritual, then it becomes perfect. But if it's not, that's when we notice that, it's like this. Let us say there's no electricity, right? But somehow or another, there's a fad that everybody has toasters, right? So now, they will not make toast. But because everybody has, and it's the fashion, what's going to be the prestige element? That's going to make it that you got a better toaster than the other person, right? Yours is more shiny than the others. Yours is bigger than the others.
Four slices.
and then the guy from South Carolina walks in with one with 8 slices. Got 10 kids. They got 2 of them. Yeah. So that's it. Yeah. Mainly that's it. 4 slices. You got 2. What? Like that, or the finish on it. It's got some different unique finish or some embellishments like that, or it costs more. It's heavier. So everybody, according to their modes, then something about the toaster will be, practical for them, And if you're from the South, then there's probably some guys who have motorized it and are riding around on it, right? As they like to do. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then it's all about that. But now the Vaishnavas are coming and saying, this has no value, this has no meaning. The real meaning is it makes toast. And they're all looking at, what are you talking about? Why? Because they don't know about electricity, so they don't actually know what it's for. That's why it says, if you have religion, but it isn't connected to Krishna, it's useless. Because the purpose of religion is their mediums to serve Krishna. Right, because he being all activities, all desires, all fragrances, all rasa, so then all these things are used in his service. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, there's going to be contradictory. And because we're working on this ascending process of faith, of faith, we can't appreciate contradiction because we're saying we're being logical, we're intellectual, it doesn't make sense. Right? At the same time, as there's so many things in their own perspective that's contradictory, but they will be able to reconcile it. And then other people, they can't reconcile it, right? So therefore, their faith is bad, my faith is good, even though both are dealing with faith and both are dealing with inconsistencies. Right? It's just that within the context of karma, you consider your faith to be sentimental and the faith in Gyan to be scientific and all that kind of thing. So it's just a matter of, all these things. And say what you like is that the intellectual guy can say what he like and the other guy gets into his fancy car and drives home to a big fancy house. Well, the guy that's the intellectual, maximum he can get is a spot in that little cafe on the sidewalk and get himself a cup of coffee. Like that. But of course, the intellectual is better. We don't need all that. And the other one is like, that's all he's got. Look at what I got. So that's the thing is that it's all coming from Krishna. And we're saying this part of Krishna is good, this part's not. But we're not seeing it in the context of Krishna's opinion of that. It's like if I go into the rich man's house and I start saying, this is good, that's not, this is important, this is useless. Yeah, get rid of this. It's kind of like, what do you mean? He knows how to use all that. That's why it's there. And he may use it slightly different than you would. Just like, let's say, the adults might, possibly sit in the living room, in the sofa and all those things, and have a conversation and, like this, maybe, some interaction. The kids will also use it for interaction, right? They'll play cricket. You know? It's just different values. So we have to see is that to reconcile, we have to go above that material conditioning and see it from that position. But to be able to see it from that position, it's only by the association of the Vaishnavas. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's not that you can't see elements of this philosophy when it's dealing with the position of the material world. But you can't see them all together. You can only see what you can perceive in your modes. So only the Vaishnavas can present the philosophy that's beyond the modes, beyond what you're used to seeing. Does that make sense? Because it's coming from the other side.
Too much. When we are under the mode, we are always with the concept of time and space.
Yes, always time and space. That's why we have to put it. That's why I say it's inconsistent and all these things. Because you also have the thing, it's linear, so it's this, then this, then this. Yes. But the spiritual being eternal, it's all of that's always there. It's just a matter of which is manifest or not. It's not a matter of it. It's like the jivas, they don't have a beginning. They're always there. There may be an expansion of the jiva, the particular individual, but they're always there. You know, so all the energies are there, what potencies they can do, everything's always there. So that's the difficulty. And so we want to see it in this logical progression, because, like you said, it's time, and then where it fits in space. How can two things be in one place at once? You know, physicists can kind of catch it, but the problem is they're so diseased they can't even deal with anything beyond, you know, math, basically. You know? Because technically, I mean, there's two cats in the box. One's dead, one's alive. But, you know, like that. So they'll accept that. But at the same time, as if you explain that that's how the spiritual reality works, then they can't see beyond that. So that's the difficulty. People will see something. Oh yeah, material nature is bad in this way. But that same where it's bad there for someone else is good. You know, it's just like you have the thing of, okay, you have the what do you call it? Let us take, you know, the big villain and the big hero. Okay? And so you can have an exact common thing between them. You know, came from an unfortunate background, you know, poor, orphans, or this or that, or, you know, so many different things like that. One of them pushes through that, gets himself, you know, properly trained and educated, and, you know, all the skills and everything like that, and uses it for the benefit of other people. Right? Very typical kind of, you know, hero background. At the same time, that's specifically the exact background for the big villain. You know, there, the orphan, nobody cared, no one this and that. He was dealt with roughly, so therefore he wants to destroy the world. So this thing is, yeah, if it's like this, it's going to create this and that. But at the same time, is that exact same situation creates exactly the opposite. So that's the whole point, is that these contradictory elements are reconciled in Krishna. They're not reconciled in the material world because of time and space. But Krishna being the origin of all this, then there's no problem. Does that make sense? Yes.
So difficulty will come up that we will place something in a box when we hear that information, and then we'll infer on that based on our experience or based on our mundane application. So how we move from that kind of box type of analysis to actually the complete. So therefore then we'll interact with the Lord according to his position as opposed to coming from ours.
The point is, because in there is the problem the box, or the problem is the box not connected to the Lord? Because where's the box from?
Right.
It means that you have the three modes of nature, and therefore you have the Varnashram system where people have all these different natures. You know, those different aspects aren't the problem. Is it connected to the Lord? It is connected to the Lord. It's not a problem. Because we're saying everything's got to be equal. So that means the foot, the hand and the nose got to be equal. So, you know, we're supposed to like pogo stick around on our nose or something like that. You know, so I mean, certain communities would be an advantage, and others would not. You know, so you know, so that's the difficulty is that we decide these things by the modes. But the thing is these modes are always there. You know, because all of the sciences, hard or soft, they're all based on a consistency of knowledge and action or reaction within a particular area of perspective or view. Does that make sense? If it wasn't there, you can't have that. You know, you can't have psychology unless there's a consistency. Right? You can't have physics unless there's a consistency. Or ecology unless there's a consistency. Or biology unless there's a consistency. So that's the whole point, is that the consistency is there. And so then they're having that faith in that, and then acting on that, speaking on that, identifying with that, you know, and from that getting that experiences. But it's not seeing that, but where does all this come from? What is holding it all together? I mean, the physicists talk about the unified theory, but they can't deal with the unified theory that it comes from a person. Because the point is that people are there, and then they have their extension, the impersonal. It's like you have somebody's house. Now, you know the person very nicely. You can go into that person's house. Going into that person's house, you can see their personality. Right? But that what you're seeing is not directly personal. It's impersonal. It's an impersonal manifestation of the person. Everybody has that, you know. It's like even the artists, you know. We're talking. They want their voice. They want to be heard. It has to be me or things like that. But what they're talking about being me is something that's not themselves. You know, their clothes, how they deal, their talk, their walk. But that's not them, right? And so, but they're saying that. So that's the impersonal aspect. So it's just everybody's accepting it, you know, or even the scholars. It's, you know, it's their work, it's their theory, it's their, you know. So he's written his thesis, and on that, then it's been presented at a conference. It's gotten some people have appreciated. It gets some traction. It starts to, you know, move forward, and like that. But that form of it is an impersonal aspect of that intellectual. So that's just the way everything works. But then all the things we see here can't be from a person. So that's where you see is that it breaks down in the intellectual field, because it's about the control, right? I mean, the karma is about enjoyment, right? Attachment and enjoyment. The pessimist is about envy and control. I mean, even how he says the Nietzsche, that's a major point of his philosophy, is that, you know, why are people talking bad about envy? Envy makes you work hard and go out there and accomplish things. Right? He's not distinguishing between envy and jealousy. He says envy, but he's actually describing jealousy. So that's the difficulty. And then he doesn't see is that, okay, but why are you thinking that to improve yourself is a better thing? He's falling into the exact same trap. He's saying everybody else is foolish. They're talking about this realm beyond. So you're talking about I can work and improve, and that will create happiness. Because if that's true, where is the example of someone who's happy? You know. So that's the difficulty. You're working on exactly the same thing. You know, if we're saying that all the people are like this, that includes the person who's saying all the people are like this. So the only way you can hold together all those completely different aspects, but then maintain consistency, is then with the Lord. Because the person is the origin and the impersonal, not the other way around. It's not that I have a house, and then the house sits there for some time, and then you come back after a while, and now there's people in the house. Right? No, people make the house, not the other way around. So from the personal comes the impersonal. Right? You don't have any example of it going the other way. They talk about it, it'll happen, but you know, that's foolish. So that's the whole point, is that the Lord has all these. He's the origin. It's the person who is the origin. So before it was, he exists beyond. The person's the original. Now it's talking about the attributes are coming from the person. Right? So the first was the existence of the person, and then the existence of everything else. Now it's about the attributes of the Lord, and therefore everything else has attributes. He has qualities, that's why everything else is qualities. Like when you talk about something, what's the quality of it? Right? You want to buy something, you look at, you know, what's the qualities of it? What are the views? What do people think about it? You know, specs.
Specifications.
Okay, yeah, just you get the, you know, the thing. You know, what's the full word, right? Yeah. You know, all these different things is that you want to know. So that's the existence of something, and then it has qualities, right? So the qualities come from the Lord. Right? So that's it. Ayam atma pahata pa'ma. The Lord is devoid of all sin. Right, Chandogya Upanishad 8.7.1. Right, so you see in the same Upanishad, it'll talk about no material qualities, but it'll talk about what qualities he actually does have. So you see is that the Maya bodies will take the ones that talk about impersonal, leave all the personal ones. But the same Upanishads will have both. Etam shamyad vam iti avakshate etam sarvani vamani nayati esha u eva bhamanihi esha sarveshu vedeshu bhati. He is called full of good qualities. All qualities come to him. This attractive form is revealed in all the Vedas. Chandogya Upanishad 4.15.2. So it's saying that this is actually what the Vedas are talking about. Because the Upanishads being the essence of the Veda, then they're going to be giving you that direction. And so here they're saying that all the Vedas talking about this, right? He's full of good qualities. Because otherwise, we're not interested in something if it doesn't have qualities, right? Because qualities, what do qualities do? What can I do with qualities, right? The qualities of something means I can produce a particular result, right? Unless it has the quality to produce the result I want, why would I work with it? Right? Does that make sense? Like I have a hammer, and I need to put a screw into the wall. Right? Now, in any other country but India, you wouldn't know what to do. You only have a hammer. Right? You look for a screwdriver. Of course, in India, they'll hammer the screw into the wall. And they'll even claim that it's actually better. I've actually heard that. They drill the hole. Okay, they did that. Then they take the screw and hammer it in.
They only cut an edge.
Right? All the way. So that means actually by the threads, they've broken all the wood there. Then, because it's broken forward, then they just slightly screw it back a little bit, and so that pulls it back, and they said, now it'll hold it. They don't understand that the foundation of all those threads have been already broken. You know, so that's why whatever you hang on the wall with the screw, you know, in India, after a few months, it falls out. This is exactly why. While in the West, you put it in the screw, you come back after 10 years, it's still there. But, so, we're not using the example of India. We're using anywhere else. And so, therefore, it doesn't match. Because why? The hammer doesn't have a quality that matches with the screw, but a screwdriver does. Right? Does that make sense? So that's it. It's when we're looking for it, because what do we want? We want a result. And why do we want a result? What do we think the result will get us? Right? It'll bring us happiness. Right? So, to be happy, we want results. To get results, you have to have qualities. To have qualities, you have to have existence. Right? So, we're just taking, because this is going through, it's a logical presentation, right? And so, therefore, then it's going up. It'll basically be within the context of you know, like not Nyaya Prashtan, right? So it's going to be presenting that God has existence, and that existence is as a person. That's why everything else has that personal aspect.
Yes.
Then he has attributes. That's why everything else has attributes. Yes. Then we'll say he'll have taste. He is rasa. That's why everybody's looking for happiness.
Yes.
Yes. Is that something? You know, so it's progressively going through. Because if we just start with the happiness, people will argue over that. It's harder to argue over existence. Right? It's just the natural way of doing it. Right? Mm-hmm. Four, if someone's not scholarly inclined, like that, starting with the results, that would be better. Because they want to know what they're going to get out of it. Because their interest is in attachment, into results, enjoyment. That's in the prayojana aspect. Right? And the others, it's about the existence of things. Right? I think the other goal is an existentialist. You know, do we exist or not? You know, I think, therefore I am. You know? But so does that mean you exist depending upon what you think about? You know? So you know, yeah.
I think of this, therefore I am that.
Huh? I think of this, therefore, yeah. The phrase Sarva Gandha means he is most fragrant. When the Bhagavatam verse says that the Lord attains birth, activities, and qualities, it does not mean that he attains the faults in those qualities, since it is contrary to Shruti and the Lord is established as the highest spiritual entity. So you have spiritual on one side and entity all the way on the other. They say it's a, you know, it's a right and left justified, so two words, so one. Yes. So that's the thing, there's no fault. That he's the origin of all qualities. So therefore in him there's no fault. For us it's a fault. Why? Because there is sin. Right? And so what is the definition of sin? Sin means it's not according to what's recommended. Right? And so what's recommended? You have two aspects. You have you have three aspects. You have the existence of it, how it mechanically works. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say, how cooking works. Right? So the process of cooking doesn't matter what cuisine it is, you know, or what you're cooking. Does that make sense? Like that. So that is the existence of it. But then the next question is, who should be cooking? Who's qualified for cooking? Right? Then the next one is, what's the purpose of the cooking? What it's for? Because how do you know what to cook? If I say just cook lunch, right? Then is that enough? Or do you need to know who it's for? What are they, you know, like this? What are we doing? You know, like that. So all these things need to be known. So the Lord, how you say? So on the level of sin, you have the aspect of it's mechanically not according to what is there. So therefore, the Shastras, when it says this is how you deal with it, it has the aspect of that's the only way that working with it actually gives a proper result. You deal with it a different way; it doesn't give it a result you're looking for. Second point is that then it has the aspect of the morality of who should be doing and all those things, right? But then there's the final thing is, well, what's the ultimate goal of it? Is it just for sense gratification, extended sense gratification, you know, for following the rules, for fruit of benefit, for liberation, or for bhakti? Right? So that's going to be the differences. What is going to be the particular goal that is there? So you can work on all these lower goals. But the point is then you always end up with the material faults. You know, that it doesn't give the satisfaction because we're not material. We're not from here. And so because of that, we can't actually ultimately relate to it. You know, it's like before the point was is we don't have the samskaras of the point. But we also, why is it we think that the material world that is not delivering what we want? Right? So in other words, the optimists are saying, if we work with it nicely, we can get good results, we'll be happy. Right? And they're working hard. But then some are observing that I've worked hard, I'm not happy. So then they'll come up with those philosophies. Right? But where's the context of being happy? Because the one is I intellectualize about it and get an intellect, then I'm happy. Right? So where does this basis point of being happy come from? That's because of the nature of the soul. And the nature of being part and parcel of Krishna, it comes from Him. Right? So we have to see is what's the ultimate point or result of applying this process. Right? Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. So then we'll get that. Yes.
So if we take Sat and Chit as part of Sambandha Gyan,
yes,
and then Ananda naturally in Prayojana, so what connects the two?
Is applying that knowledge. Because even in the Sambandha Gyan, it'll be the knowledge of the result. So you're going to have... Sambandha Gyan means you have the knowledge of what it is, its identity, what's the proper thing, who should be doing, what it can do, what its result can be. Yeah. All that together, then so the knowledge of Sambandha you have to have. But it also means you have to have the knowledge of... You have to have... In that context, what's the Abhideya and what's the Prayojana? The theoretical.
Yes.
Then you have to apply it as Abhideya. So Abhideya is only when you apply it. That's why we can be talking about, let's say, Sanatana Goswami talks a lot about devotional service.
Yes.
But it's called Sambandha Gyan. Because he's only talking about the position of bhakti. Right, in Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, he's showing who is the best devotee, what is the highest realm. It's not about the practices of those persons. You know what I'm saying? The position of it, the mechanics of it, these kind of things. But the actual application of it, that's Rupa Goswami. Right? And he mentions in the sixth chapter that he's taking this knowledge from Sanatana Goswami. He's just putting it together now in the context of Abhideya, of application. So that's why even in Abhideya, then you'll see there's knowledge. But now it's called Abhideya because it's the knowledge being used in application. See, the first one is it's knowledge so that you're inspired to use it. You're attracted to it. I talk about the glory of bhakti, then you're attracted to it. Now, learning that knowledge about bhakti to apply it, that takes it into Abhideya. Then, having gotten the results and now tasting it, that's Prayojana. Does that make sense? So the connection is the Abhideya. So you have Krishna's existence and Radharani as the Ananda. So what's going to bring together the two? The pastimes.
Because as you mentioned, we want to put everything in the boxes, and we have three positions, and we have three, you know, things, then we're trying to, but actually, according to this explanation, it's three, three, and three. So it's all in all the positions.
It's in all the positions, but in one, it's the knowledge about it and the inspiration. The second is the actual application of it. The third is the results that then you're tasting. But yes, it's the same thing. That's why when you study it as three seemingly separate things. But in application, they all go together. But each has its own flavor and its own aspect. You know, it's just like when you cook something. You have three, let's say, separate ingredients. But when you put them together, you appreciate, like I think it was in Nectar Devotion, is talking about when you have the sthayi bhava, the secondary rasa, and the vyavichari bhavas. And that combination, it gives one taste. But at the same time, is you can analyze what are the different ingredients of that taste. You know, this much of the sthayi is coming out, this much of the secondary, and these particular vyavichari bhavas. You know, just like it's saying, it means if you take yogurt, and you take black pepper, and you take rock candy, and you mix them together. So you're going to have hot, sweet, and sour. Right? And you put it together, it will give a very nice flavor combined. But at the same time, as you can still go, nice, okay, it's yogurt, it's black pepper, there's rock candy. But it's one flavor. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that's the importance of Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, if that's appreciated, how high you can how high you can taste within this realm. Right? So if you're using Dwait Advait, Vishishta Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait, or Dwait Advait, you'll be able to taste something, but you won't be able to taste the degree that you taste in Achinta Beta Beta Tattva. Because this point of that is simultaneously they're one and different. So you can taste the one, you can taste the difference. Yes.
In this example, it's interesting that what people appreciate, because they taste some mundane rasa as well, but not knowing the science, not knowing sthayi or even secondary bhav,
right.
What they appreciate is vyabhichari. That's what's on the surface.
Yes, that's what's on the surface.
Even secondary. It's within the secondary subsection in the secondary.
Yes.
Experience.
Yes,
but we see it all the way back.
Yes, that's the point. Is that when you see everything back to Krishna, then you can appreciate how all these things move and all those things. Because then it's there's why is it coming up? What's the cause of that? It means let's say there's a particular mood coming up of disappointment, but why is that coming up? That's becoming up because of that relationship with Krishna. And so then in that we're expecting Krishna to be there, but Krishna hasn't come. So therefore there's disappointment. But it's still in context of Krishna. So without Krishna, then it doesn't have any meaning. Otherwise it has to be that, you know, how you say you're eating your ice cream and it fell off the cone and onto the ground. Then there's disappointment, right? So then, you know, then here, then who's the ashray, who's the bishai? Yes.
So would our disease be that we think that variety in the secondary gives us consistency in the primary, whereas actually we should actually have the primary as stable and then maybe the secondary will get variety?
Yes, but at the same time, is even though the primary is stable and has that oneness, it doesn't mean that there's no variety. It means all variety that we're dealing with, all secondary, comes from the primary. So that's the tendencies we want to, by our mundane logic, that if everything is coming from and all these inconsistencies, then that means Brahman would have all these inconsistencies. But the point is Brahman being the source of it, there are no inconsistencies. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that everything comes from there, and so there's no problem. So that's what we have to accept, is that we have to accept we're being exposed to this descending process, to the deductive aspect, is that there's already a standard, there's already knowledge, there's already authority. We just have to accept it. Okay? And it's such a simple thing, but we see for the materialist it's not well appreciated. Right? Because if it was well appreciated, Socrates, you know, things would have turned out different for Socrates. But because he insisted on this point, you know, to the degree he understood it, then it wasn't appreciated. Right? And who was behind his demise was coming from the more intellectual and professional and how you say, you know, established background. You know, materially established backgrounds. Because then you have to adjust your life with the authority rather than you are the authority. Right? So the modern doesn't mind deductive. As long as deductive means everybody listens to you, then that deductiveness works nice. You have the chair at the university, what they say everyone else does, that's called deductive. But how did he get that knowledge? It was through inductive. But we're talking about actual deductive, that is coming down from the Lord. And because it comes down from the Lord and everything comes from the Lord, then we coming from the Lord and all of what we're perceiving comes from the Lord, then from our inductive position, we can perceive that. Right? But it has to be based on. In other words, the inductive has to be based on the deductive. Right? Pratyaksha has to be based on Shabda. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so now a doubt. Quote, it is contrary to say that the Lord has birth and activities and does not have birth and activities. Right? So that's the problem. He's saying it's contradictory. Because when you're dealing with the scholastic aspect, the first point you try to find is any contradictions. If there's a contradiction, means it wasn't well thought out, means not being well thought out, means it's not up to the intellectual standard, not being up to the standard, it's thrown out. So if you can find any discrepancy, it's thrown out. Right? But the problem comes is that they're using their own perspective to define it's inconsistent. For someone else, it's not inconsistent. For them, it is. Right? So, that of course gives a fresh perspective and all that. You know, it's just like, I think it's Rupa Goswami is defining hasya, or hasa, you know, the aspect of laughter, is when something contradictory comes into view of the senses. It creates laughter. Right? So if you have a comedian, they move around the world and see the exact things we are seeing, but we see them in a consistent fashion. Well, they look for the inconsistencies. And then they present it in a, you know, pleasantly. Depends upon who it is. But they present the inconsistencies. Right? How you say? Yeah, the British Indian guy is generally more pleasant, but the British guy is always kind of snarky. Right? So they present it, and then seeing the contradiction, we laugh. Right? So that's the whole point, is that for somebody, they see the contradiction, for somebody, they don't. So that's the whole point of the difference in perspectives. What the Brahmin sees, they'll see the consistencies in the others. That gives them a position. But at the same time as then their position, then it'll be seen by others. And so everybody has their position. And therefore, if you stick to your position, that's why Krishna says, do your duties. With your perspective, your duties will work. But that perspective for others, it won't work. You know? So that's why on the external platform, everybody has their duties according to their nature. But ultimately, because you have the transcendental, everything's reconciled in the Lord. But as a person, in the impersonal, it's still not reconciled. Because it may reconcile certain things for the intellectual, wanting to apply his material logic, but it won't satisfy the karmi. Right? And then if you present simply the aspects of the karma yoga, it will satisfy the karmi, but won't satisfy the jnani. Because still, yes, you're working and you do all these things, and your family and your money and everything you're using in the Lord's service, but then for the jnani, then it's, but I'm still suffering. How to get beyond that? Right? So therefore, only bhakti, where it's about the Lord as a person, then you can deal. Because even he's God, okay, but being God and he's big and all that, then there's always that aspect that, you know, you do something wrong and, you know, here comes a thunderbolt and you turn into a little pile of ash. Right? And everybody kind of like, you know, as they're walking, kind of steps around and all that, and amongst themselves they talk and like, yeah, I always knew he was kind of like that, you know, like that kind of thing. Does that make sense? So, these positions, the only one that could, means by the impersonal, you can't catch everybody. By his position as God, or Paramatma, you can't catch everybody. But as a person, because the person includes the Brahman and Paramatma, therefore that's the universal feature. People aren't used to it, because who's used to universal? Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing. Everyone talks universal, but they're only talking in the context of themselves. Yes?
It seems as though our Gaudiya Vedanta conclusion is even more beyond the purview of logic to the mundane intellectual than like Lord Ram or Lakshmi Narayan, for example.
Yes.
Because in the reflection, the most confidential Leelas of the 10th canto, as they reflect in the mundane world, it's the most mundane, binding, degraded behavior.
Yes.
Either emulate those or to misunderstand and cause offenses by explaining those improperly.
Yes, yes.
So it seems like it's a really, like, I guess a fine line or a really double-edged sword, our particular Vedanta conception.
That's why, when it's presented, because you see in the others, you can't present them with a little bit more, if there's a touch more of the of aspects of karma, yon, then it'll still work. But for us, that's why the aspect of that humility, the tolerance, you know, that those qualities, respect of others, not looking for respect, the more those qualities are being appreciated in the individual, the better you can present this. Because you have to present what's beyond. You know, it's just like sometimes like a child can say something, you know, it's so obvious fact, but the adults just kind of ignore it, but the child can say it because of that innocence and things like that. So that's the whole thing, is that what's being said is cutting beyond, because it's like, it's interesting, is as we're, you know, discussing, let's say, the you know, here the Sandarbhas, and, you know, includes the Vedanta Sutra kind of view and all these things, and you're quoting a lot from 11th canto and these kind of aspects. So then from there, going back and let's say reading one of the small books that we'll say is very basic. You know, that we'll tend to think, oh, it's basic, you know, I'm going to get into the, you know, so I study Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita or, you know, books of the Acharyas or things like that. But when you go back and read one of those books, you'll see that all these technical points are all said in that little small book. You know, it's all there. There's nothing lacking. It's just that the language that Prabhupada would use would be a language that anybody can relate to. Right? Does that make sense? Because generally for a scholarly presentation, you want to have a scholarly attitude, scholarly vocabulary, scholarly way of presentation, you know, using scholarly phrases. Then it has the taste for the scholar. Does that make sense? You know, so that's always going to throw. Just like, let's say I'm presenting some very lofty, logical kind of thing. Now, if and the audience is all there, everybody's in their suits. It's all, you know, very, you know, proper kind of like social scene and all that, very formal. And then the person that gets up to speak, you know, speaks in a very clear, articulate, you know, accent. You know, then you'll generally have a tendency to appreciate this person's educated. You know, then you're willing to listen to what he says. But let's say the guy comes up and he starts speaking in some kind of really, you know, funny dialect. You know, like that, you know, if I would say.
Huh? Deep Scottish accent.
Yeah, something like that. Or like that, you won't take it as seriously. You know? So that's the whole point, is that we're put, our taste is by the quality of it. So you actually have to be more advanced to appreciate the thing for what it is without that having to have particular qualifications. You know. Mm-hmm. You know, so that comes up. That's one of the elements of Ruchi. Is that the kirtan's nice, the melody's really good, the beat is going nicely, the singing is good, the voice is good, everybody's responding nicely in the right attitude, you know, the dancing's going nicely, then I get absorbed. You know? But if something's off, I don't like it. It's still the same holy name, can be chanted with the same purity, the same devotion, but I'll do something, it'll be based on that. You know? So the same way is the karmis are the same. That's where we're getting it from. It's from the mundane existence. Because in the spiritual world, there is that just rasa is appreciated by everyone. And then within appreciating rasa, they have their specific, what they prefer. So it has both. It has that generic and it has the specific. Both of them. So all living entities from the spiritual world can appreciate rasa. from any realm at the same time as they have their specific flavor and where they like to apply that. Yes.
The question is, can we actually chant pure name before attaining stage of Ashakti? Because in Ashakti, it doesn't really matter who's chanting which melody and this and that.
Yes,
before
yes.
that, it is, as you explained.
Means it can be pure, but the problem is we just have to find those conditions in which we're good. You know, it's just like so for someone sitting down, then they chant, then it's good. Someone else is walking. Someone wants to be in the temple. Someone wants to be out in the park. You know, so you find those conditions in which that pure chanting can be there.
So but it is possible.
It is possible. But the point is that it's just, it becomes, the taste is more accessible. It's wider. It becomes deeper. Because, see, is that if there's no dependence upon external quality, that means in any time, place, and circumstance, you can appreciate, you know, the Lord's name, form, and qualities.
Yeah.
If it's based on a specific, you know, qualification, then if the qualification is there, then it will be very much appreciated. And so to that degree it's there, to that much you'll appreciate. So it's just a matter of the steadiness. So one that we're established in steadiness in devotional service, that you can say is happening at Nishta. You know, that we're appreciating the taste, whether we're getting it or not, but we're going for that taste. That steadiness is there in Ruchi. But where that consistence of taste, where you're absorbed in the Lord, that will be Asakti. Does that make sense? And then when that deepens, that will become bhava. So when it's always experienced in ecstatic emotions, that's bhava. Then within that stage, then the next is like we say, because that's generic, it's just about Krishna. Then what comes forward is the particular rati that one has. That then becomes the prominent. So then one is able to work in that. When that becomes prominent, where it becomes exclusive, that brings you to Purva Rag. So there's that complete absorption of Krishna. So you could say there's that complete feeling of separation. Right? Then you can come in contact with Krishna and really appreciate it. Otherwise, before, you're in contact with Krishna, and it will give you that feeling of bhava. But it's not giving the depth. Does that make sense? Like you meditate. We'll say I meditate. I sat down for 10 minutes and did meditation. We'll call it meditation. But in yoga, that would just be, you know, intermittent. Then you're going to have regular. Then you have going to have constant, right? But it'll have to come to samadhi, where it's deep. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that. Then having come to there, now you can appreciate Krishna's, who Krishna is. Because otherwise, Krishna, who he is, then if you don't appreciate the position he's in, or who he is, then something is there. I mean, everybody's getting something from Krishna's whatever is going on in the material world. They value something. They'll appreciate Krishna. They don't know it's Krishna, right? So everyone's appreciating. But then the point to where the acharyas talk about his beauty and his fragrance and all these different aspects. Then it's till when you come to that platform of Purva Rag, where one is so absorbed in the focus of your particular rati that it brings. But that particular rati is based on that you're in bhava. Bhava is based on sadhana, right? Does that make sense? So that means is your attachment. Attachment means there's a taste. Taste comes because you're stable. Stable becomes because there's no anartas. Anartas are removed because there's your practices. Practices are there because you associate with devotees. You associate because of faith. And that faith came from devotees. So it's just a matter of wherever you are, that's where you work at. Not the, oh, I want that, so I'll just do that. You know, it's not like the first grader, he just takes his, you know, father's, you know, physics, you know, books and all that and sits down and looks at those. He doesn't even know arithmetic. You know, you just find your position. So that's why the Sahajiyas, they take a position as higher and then project that what I'm doing is that, when it's not. Right? So you'll get that run of how it goes in very specific. You know, the acharyas will talk about it. So we'll talk in general. We'll bring you to bhava to prema. We're not making the mechanical, because, you know, in other words, we're talking on the sambandha level, right? Or trying to inspire the prayojana, you know, the highest happiness of ultimate and all these kind of things. But those ones, the technical we were just discussed now, that's in the Abhideya. That if you're going to apply it, you have to know that, you know, do you have this? You can say, no, but I want this rati, so it's okay, so then you have that, you're on bhava. No. So then, okay, so you're fully attached to Krishna and everything and not worried about the social. No. Okay. So then you're absorbed. You have a good, strong taste and all that for that. No. Are you steady in devotional service and all that? What kind of samta? Why not? Because of anartas. Does that make sense? So then that way we situate ourselves. Does that make sense? So what, you know, and it can be overlapping. One area will be more ahead, another area will be behind. You know, like let's say chanting might be more advanced, you know, honoring prasad may be less advanced. You know.
Hmm?
Yeah, for some it's the other way around. You know? Like I said, I remember probably 70% of those early 70s, 70% of the brahmacharis, then they said that, yeah, I joined because of the halava. You know, so
there was also a pastime of Prabhupada saying, you know, some people will come because of the holy name, some people come because of the book, some people come because of prasadam. Prabhupada, look at the audience. Actually, all of you prasadam.
Yes. Yes. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
In Madhurja Kadambini, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that it's not linear. That the creation of your spiritual body and destruction of your material body, it overlaps, as you mentioned. And then, but we want to work from 100% perspective. So this is if 12%, you know, of the material is destroyed, then 88% of spiritual is already there, but it's not like that. It's beyond. You know,
it's beyond. That's why you see is there, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is putting the emphasis on that mood and the attitude, the experience, what's being tasted. Because prayojana means taste. Because he's defining there that bhava is continuous ecstasy. That is the position of spontaneous devotional service. Because spontaneous means it's continuous. Before that, there may be now and again some spontaneity, but it's not technically called spontaneous devotional service until it's constant. You know, does that make sense? So that's why, you know, so much hoo-ha on trying to overemphasize the spontaneous devotional service. So the point is it's mentioned, those who catch it, then they apply it. But if you overemphasize it, those who can't use it, then they'll try to. And then that's always going to be a problem. You know, so it's mentioned enough to create inspiration, but not so much to create distraction. So that's the... Okay, so...
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Nityai Gaura Premananda.